Welcome back in NSC Backstage. Tony Husband and special co-presenter this week, Wes Bowling, with you. We are presented by Camarena Tequila. Good evening to Wes Bowling.
Thank you for having me. Awfully big shoes to fill, and if you saw my left foot stepping into a soccer ball, you'd realize, Jamie, definitely big shoes to fill metaphorically and physically.
Absolutely. You do know Jamie's only about 5'8", don't you? So, you know, the shoes maybe aren't that huge, but, you know, I know what you mean. We miss you, Jamie, and we will have you back with us next week, of course. But it is an absolute pleasure, Wes, to have you with us. And, well, what a show to be stepping in for tonight. I'm just sitting here right now, laptop's out. I'm staring at the Eastern Conference standings. I'm looking at New England there, and then I'm looking at Nashville in second. Do you know what? I mean, you just get a little sense of the kind of fervor around Nashville Soccer Club fans right now, because I just did a simple tweet this morning. I just took a screen grab of the conference, tweeted that out, and just said, Happy Monday, Nashville fans. And that's the biggest response I've had on a tweet about Nashville Soccer Club since I've been here. People just in a very, very happy place right now with this team.
Well, the crowd that greeted the FC Cincinnati match on Saturday night was the largest of the season for Nashville SC. And now, Tony, this is the highest that Nashville's ever been in the table in Major League Soccer in its year and a half in the league, as they are in their best scoring form. And, you know, we walked out of the Atlanta draw down there. That was the seventh match unbeaten for this team, and said, man, it's going to be hard to top this season. They lost to New York Red Bulls, and here they are, seven unbeaten again.
Yeah, fantastic. And it was another memorable Saturday night, and here are the highlights as heard with Wes and, of course, John Freeman, right here on ESPN 94.9.
Got bumped off the ball. Mukhtar continuing forward. Mukhtar splits it across towards the post. He scores and backflips his way to the corner. Turn it up. The boys in gold strike first. 13th minutes. 1-0 Nashville.
Field to Sapong. Able to spin and distribute right side to Leal. Punches it back for Sapong, and he gallops towards the elbow of the 18. Sapong returns to Leal. Scores! A goal to Gawkett. Sensational! A supreme team goal! Sapong and Leal combined to slice right through FCC, and the boys in gold lead 2-0 in the 36th minute.
Free kick for Nashville, angle to the right. Tani Mukhtar standing over. The center backs have run forward. Mukhtar puts his arm up, steps forward, hangs up the cross. It's a good cross! It's a headed goal! And a brace for C.J. Sapong! They are ruthless! They will stop at nothing! Two goals for Sapong, and Nashville leads 3-0. And FC Cincinnati wants to know where lions can hide on a riverbank.
I wonder if they found the answer. But
John Freeman, the team bus on the way home.
Yeah, John Freeman on the call. I was going to say on the night they've got West End Stadium, but they probably just wanted to head down West End Avenue and get out of Nashville. First win against FC Cincinnati. Now, Wes, you're a veteran of these times pre MLS day. So what did it mean for long-term fans and observers of this club to get that victory?
Tony, it meant everything. Five matches between these two teams in their history, including the one earlier this season at Nissan Stadium, and five draws between these clubs. And it was so interesting how the pendulum has swung in history, because when Nashville came into USL in that first season, it was Cincinnati's last year in the league, and they were ready to be promoted to Major League Soccer. They were the starlets. They were on top of the world, and Nashville would not let them break them down. Nashville drew them every time, and now, of course, it's been Nashville on the front foot. But that first match of the season, I think, you know, Gary Smith would tell you it was disappointing not to get 3 points. And so to get the result against Cincy in absolutely rampant fashion with that 3-0 win is great. Taylor Washington said it best, you know, He and Matt LaGrasse have been around and played in each of these matches against Cincinnati, dating back to USL days. He said he walked off the pitch, he walked by Ian Ayer, and he said, "We finally got him."
Yep, absolutely. No, and you know, all the history, all the Big Bird, Tucker Hume, you know, the penalty shootout as it went to, you know, last time in a USL playoff game. Well, all that put away. Convincing result, really, for Nashville. 15 goals in the last 7 games as well. I think the couple of narratives that are shifting a little bit, obviously, early weeks of the season, the challenge was falling behind in games and constantly chasing games, which is an unusual thing for us to be watching from a Gary Smith side. But also, goals were a challenge at times. But that has changed as well in recent weeks. With now 24 goals for the season. And, of course, that 24, it took them 23 games, I think, to do that last season. So, you know, you can see the progress from that end of things.
Yeah, Nashville, the second highest scoring team at home in Major League Soccer this season. I'm not talking about total games because they played more than anybody else, but per 90, the best team per game, second best in Major League Soccer when it comes to scoring goals. And you look back to those early draws, the comeback draws against Cincinnati, against Montreal, the road draw against Atlanta. And at the time, the team was likely disappointed to be down, but glad they came back. But I think they learned so much about their attack in those early matches. They learned that they can summon those goals when they need them. And against Cincinnati this past time, they were outpossessed, intentionally so, since he was going to be the better of the possession teams. And Nashville could lie in wait and know that when it needed to strike, it had the confidence in that attack to be efficient enough to find the goal. Only 8 shots on the night. 3 of them found the back of the net.
And spearheading that attack is the man who will be our special guest in part 2 of tonight's NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. And that is CJ Sapong, who will join us, and a player who, well, is just producing lights out kind of displays at the moment, Wes, isn't he? I mean, you know, he really looks like he's in the groove. We'll ask him a little bit about it. We've got loads of fans' questions as well. Thank you to all of you who've submitted questions to us throughout the day. We've got, more than 4 dozen questions for CJ Sapong, so we will endeavour to get through as many of them as we can. Wes, from your perspective, what are you looking to get out of our conversation with CJ tonight?
Well, it's going to be an incredible conversation because he's one of the more thoughtful, introspective guys that I've met in Major League Soccer or in any sports organization. You know, when Nashville brought him into the offseason, you looked at the striker setup and you said, man, there are 5-6 veterans here with a chance to really compete and prove themselves for this team. You know, and you understand now when you talk to CJ Sapong why he was brought in. First of all, of course, he scored 4 goals in his last 3 matches. But second, the off-field presence that he has, the example that he is for his younger teammates. We will make the most of the time we have with him today. But you could sit down with CJ and talk soccer, philosophy, meditation, life, art, whatever it may be, charity, as he founded a nonprofit in Philadelphia in his time there. He's an incredible human being who also happens to be pretty darn good at soccer and is having a great run of form for the team.
Yeah, too right. And he will be our feature guest tonight here on NSC Backstage. We're also going to be joined by Luke Wahrman, the voice and face of Major League Soccer on TSN north of the border, because, well, it's a pretty big weekend, really, this weekend, Wes, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot that just goes on when you conjure up the image Nashville going on the road to Canada to play Toronto. This is the game that never was in many ways, as we wind that clock back to the unfortunate and difficult days of March 2020. So some synergy, really, that with the boys in gold going so well, they will finally head north of the border this weekend.
It's a bit surreal, isn't it? I remember I was getting in the car to drive to the training ground when we got the note that things were going to be shutting down, and had a lot of prep notes that I'll be resurfacing here for the broadcast on ESPN 94.9 this weekend that I didn't get to use then. And it's a Toronto team that's been through 2 or 3 different revolutions of the globe since then, really metaphorically as well. You know, this season, they won one of their first 11 matches under new coach Chris Armas after established coach Greg Vanney left for LA Galaxy. And you just wondered, you know, usually when a coach leaves, it's because something is broken. In this case, Toronto was anything but. They were an organization that finished second in the standings last year. And as Nashville fans well remember, the boys in gold knocked them out of the playoffs. And since then, it had been pretty dismal for this team. Armas, who's by all accounts a great gentleman and a very, very good person, leaves, and Javier Perez comes in. And this team all of a sudden is unbeaten in 4 matches. They're playing great soccer. They're back in Toronto after having to play the bulk of the start of the season down in Orlando, away from everything they know. And they just kind of feel like a team that's hitting their groove. we should expect a really interesting match this weekend. And I look forward to talking to Luke about it tonight.
That's right. We certainly will. We'll talk to him just at the end of the hour. That'll be Luke Wildman from TSN. Quick word on what else has happened around particularly the Eastern Conference this weekend. New England continue to power ahead. They are 7 points clear at the top. Orlando are in third, Wes, but wow, they got thoroughly dispatched by NYCFC. And actually, they're just hitting the buffers a little bit at the moment. 5-0 defeat yesterday, struggling run. Philadelphia have just proved to be a side that are just never out of a game. You can't count them out. Came back, got a point against Inter Miami. That was a massive point, I think, for Miami to just try and stabilize the ship there. Columbus are starting to show some signs that, you know, they're just going to grind it out and then really hit their swagger perhaps a little later in the season. So, what were your takeaways, though, from some of the other stuff we saw this weekend in the Eastern Conference?
New England getting it done against Montreal at home. That's a Montreal team that's been really hot. They go on the road to New England and have a pretty good match, but New England ended up getting the better of the chances. And you know, that was a big win for me. You mentioned Miami getting the result against Philadelphia, which helps Nashville out a lot because Miami, at least at this point, doesn't look to be a contender for the top of the table, to say it charitably, whereas Philadelphia is. And I look at the table, Tony, and I look down to 8th place, DC United. 8th, 2nd, you'd think there's a pretty good gap, right? 6 places, 6 points. Mm. That's it. And with Nashville going on the road for 13 of their 19 remaining matches, every one of these contests, starting with Toronto, then they go to New England, and then to Miami, it is a vital week for this team. And I think it has earned enough confidence through its recent road performances. I mean, you don't just shut out that Columbus Crew team at that new stadium or anywhere in Ohio. You don't do it. And Nashville did it. I think they've gained the confidence and the steely resolve that they're going to need for this stretch when the table is tight, when the score lines will likely be very tight as well. And kudos to them for taking advantage of that against Cincinnati and beating a team they were clearly better than. Now they'll go against a Toronto team that's much improved from earlier this year.
Gary Smith said to us last week, didn't he? 3 games can flip the season. And when you talk about the standings, that is why that's such a valid point. 3 games can flip anything in a good way or a bad way. Right now, it's a very good way for the boys in gold, 2nd in the Eastern Conference standings, and thanks in no small measure to the man who'll be our guest straight after the break. CJ Sapong is logged in and will join us, so we'll take a short break. You're listening to NSE Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. And welcome back to NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Tony Husband with Wes Bowling, and our special guest joining us tonight is CJ Sapong. CJ, can you hear us? Good evening. How are you?
I'm amazing. How are you guys?
We have finally managed to make a connection to you, and we appreciate your patience with that. How do we find you on this Monday night? Apart from the technical challenges of getting on the show, what would we normally find you doing at 7 o'clock on a Monday night?
I would probably be in this same spot, taking in the sunset on my deck, getting some fresh air. It's not too hot. Enjoying the background noise of the fam, kids, and dogs. So you guys got me at a good time anyway. I'm chilling.
That is a very, very pleasant. You have to bear in mind when you say it's not too hot, you're talking to an Englishman who thinks it's absolutely stifling at the moment out there. But nevertheless, it sounds like a very picturesque scene. And we find you, of course, CJ, on a Monday night in a place where, you know, things, well, they couldn't be going much better, really, for Nashville, could they? I mean, what is the mood within the camp? And how do you feel about your own personal performance after Saturday night and your 2 goals?
Yeah, it's a high point for sure. I think for us, we've understood that we are capable of these kind of performances throughout the whole season, and it feels extra good when, you know, you almost feel like there's been a couple of letdowns, you know, even with our record, you know, we feel like we could have turned a lot of those ties into wins, and feel like we could have been unbeaten at this point. So for it to translate into the kind of performance that happened this past weekend, for me to, you know, find form and, you know, just have fun playing in the good old Music City, you know, in front of these fans, it's a beautiful thing. We're soaking it in, but, you know, we're also getting back to work, and we feel like we still have a lot to prove.
CJ, you've had a couple moments in particular to soak in lately. Two goals against former clubs in Chicago and Philadelphia, and then, of course, you score the brace in the last match against Cincinnati in a rivalry match. But going back to those two goals you scored against your former clubs, Alex Hamill reached out and wanted to know, in the moments after you scored in those situations, were you thinking about who the opponents were? Were those moments extra special at that time, or are you more thinking about your teammates and game state and what's going on in front of you?
Yeah, man. I mean, in life, you got to embrace the moment, and I truly see the present as a present. And those clubs, while they did provide opportunities for me to improve as a player and as a man, ultimately they let me go. So right now at this moment, Nashville is the team that wants me, and Nashville is the place that I want to be. And, I'm never going to, stifle the opportunity at maximizing that moment with my teammates, the organization, and the fans.
Talking to the fans, CJ, two or three people have been in touch. Shadowhawk 232, Raphael, and Jan Segura, all on social media today, and all really touching on both atmosphere for home games in Nashville. I mean, you've scored your goals in home games. What that atmosphere is like to be playing in at Nissan Stadium, and indeed how it compares with some of the other stadiums you've played in and previous teams that you've been on. How do you find it there?
Yeah, man, it's very electric. I think Kansas City is the only place that's anywhere near comparable. It's beyond the capacity. It's the vibe, man. It's the vibe of the fans. And, after every game, I'm getting contacted by somebody who is, one of their first experiences. And it's cool to see soccer be such a focal point of a good time. In a major city like Nashville. And obviously, as a player, stepping on the field, I mean, you got people playing the guitar before the games. Like, they're blinking lights after you score and stuff. Like, those things are highly motivational for us as players. And it's cool when you have this kind of, like, connection with the fans that we're just feeding off of each other. And obviously, we don't lose at home. And I think that speaks volumes to the vibe and the connection.
The atmosphere is certainly one of a kind, CJ. Other than the environment at home matches, how has your time in Nashville been unique compared to your other stops? The city, the coaching, your teammates, that coming from Chris Hull and Brian Wilson kind of hitting on that subject as well. How is the locker room versus others that you've been in?
Yeah, this is one of the more diverse locker rooms I've been in. It's cool to have different cultures, different ideologies, people from different places, but all coming together under one philosophy of kind of just maximizing their potential so that they can, do that for the team. It's rare that you find from, the first to the last spot on the roster, guys that are walking into the locker room every day in a good mood and wanting to make themselves better, man, and a decade in this league, it's something that I have not seen very often, and it was something I noticed from day one, and it's a beautiful thing.
When we've talked before, you've said that you're actually typically closer to the guys in your position group with whom you're competing for playing time because you understand each other. You can relate to the challenges you're going through. You're working together on the pitch to make each other better. Since we last talked, that competition has gotten steeper with the addition of a guy like Ake Loba. How is that dynamic impacted when you're welcoming someone into the group in midseason? And what do you see as your role in, yes, competing for playing time, but also welcoming somebody else into the club and helping make them better as well?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, just number one, he's just an amazing guy. Like, you have to be some kind of messed up if you can't welcome somebody that you can just sense has a good heart. But when the whistle blows and they're in between the lines, they have a competitive nature to them. I personally, throughout my career, have recognized the benefit of having those kind of people close to you in training, in the locker room. And he's a guy that is assimilated into our group very quickly, and I believe that's going to translate to confidence on the field. And this is what you need to be a championship caliber team. You need guys along the depth chart and in multiple positions that are confident and can make things happen. And for me, I know, like, all I care about is us hoisting a trophy at the end of the season. I know through my experience, my relationship with guys, my interactions, that I have an impact on this team. And, you know, nights like Saturday night definitely are sprinkles and cherries on top, but ultimately having that innate feeling that I matter, I have value on this team is really all I need. And, yeah, that's what powers me.
You're listening tonight, everyone, to NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila, and that is the voice of CJ Sapong, who has joined us as our special guest, as MLS Cup winner in 2013. And CJ, you touched there on, you know, knowing what it takes to win a championship, as you did with Sporting Kansas City, a US Open Cup as well in 2012. Do you see yourself as well, you know, you're 32 years of age now, there's still plenty of years left in the tank, but you're a more senior level in your career. Do you see yourself as, you know, a bit of a mentor figure to some of the players at the club?
You know, yeah, obviously guys look up to me just because of, you know, my tenure. And, yeah, through my experience, I feel that when I speak, guys listen. But ultimately, I think it's about leading by example, you know, and guys understand that I look at things from maybe a more bird's eye point of view, but then can also centralize focus when I need to. And I think that just ultimately makes people want to be the best version of themselves. So that, to me, is definitely what is necessary to win a championship. I can't lie. Like, I've been on teams that have gotten close and you saw a bit of a crumbling towards the end. But with the, like I was saying earlier, with the interactions that we have, I mean, the banter that we have, the city, the fans, there's a lot of the right pieces in the right places. And I think it's just about us staying focused and handling the ebbs and flows, because there will be moments, you know, moving forward where we're not happy with the results, or we're not happy with what we're bringing to bringing on game day. But ultimately, if we keep bringing you know, our best training days and approaching it with the right mindset, we're going to go far.
You mentioned your experience, of course, of winning a championship. Gary Smith, the head coach, has experience of winning a championship as well. How have you found working under the Englishman?
It's been interesting, you know. At first, like, I found myself in a somewhat new position. You know, the thing that I now kind of really celebrate for Gary and for us is his ability to stay malleable. This is a league where typically teams kind of have their identity and execute that week in, week out. But I think through the somewhat troubles we had at the beginning of the season, we were put in positions early that showed character, that we had to show character. And that, again, speaks to the personalities that are on this team and the willingness to face adversity. And, you know, Gary is doing well to manage that aspect of players and, you know, bring new concepts week in, week out that we're taking in and we're being able to execute. You know, that's hard to do at this high level, and it's one of those things that the fans might not see. But, you know, every week we're bringing in new concepts, we're bringing in new opponents, and we're figuring out the best ways to break them down while staying true to our strengths. So, again, like I said, it's not an easy thing to do, and to be this far in the season, second place in our conference, obviously it shows you like something's working.
Well, the rigorous training certainly has paid off. You've talked before about your rigorous routine off the pitch, though. You've been very open about the fact that you are very much into meditation and deep thinking. What inspired you to get into meditation, and what role does it play in your weekly preparation? Is it something that's part of a routine for you? Is it something that you kind of read how you're feeling in a given day and decide that you know it's time to go to a quiet place and do that? Just let our listeners know, if you don't mind, what role that plays in getting ready for a match.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I became introduced to meditation through, honestly, the struggle, not just on the field, but off the field as well. I think most people, given what they're doing as their quote-unquote day job, it has a effect on their well-being outside of it. And I think with meditation, it allows me to detach from, you know, the concept of who I am as a soccer player that might be a little bit self-limiting in real life. So as I've moved through my career, I've been able to detach, which has allowed me to actually put more intention into what I want to get out of soccer, as opposed to, you know, treating it as a fix or a void that needs to be filled, you know. So, you know, I really wish I had more time to meditate. Meditation sounds in my house are kids crying and screaming and dogs barking. but I believe it's all in working order, because through my meditational practice, I've been able to, you know, find little moments in the day where I just simply focus on my breathing, and I feel way more grounded, and I feel just reality kind of rewarding me for taking a second to step back and smell the flowers, man. You know, I think a lot of us, especially given the last year we've all gone through, might feel like we're in a bit of a twilight zone. You know, there's a lot of wild things going on around us, and we have a tendency to hold on to the things that we are comfortable with and know. And sometimes that leaves you a little bit jaded. But when you can take a deep breath, 5-10 minutes a day, you're really trying to get into it, 30 minutes to an hour, you start to recognize the finer things in life. And you're able to embrace the moments just a little bit deeper. And it just makes you go about your day in a better mood.
And has that positioned your soccer career in almost a different place in your life, and in many ways made it a more fulfilling career? That you have it now it's a part of a routine, it's a part of your life. Has it helped you in your career? Do you think it's benefited your playing side?
Oh, 1,000%. You know, like my goal celebration, the namaste, you know, recognizing the light in someone else and, you know, seeing that from the light within yourself. You know, I've kind of transmuted a very entertainment-based statistic in a goal into something that I can now cherish for, I believe, forever. You know, because in that moment of pure entertainment and pandemonium, you know, when I do that namaste, it really is a connection to the fans. It's even a connection to fans, you know, at away games, because through meditation, I've been able to see the deeper rooted aspect of all of our interactions at these games, these moments. And while I'm able to engulf myself deeply into it and, you know, try and maximize my potential on the field, it is a reminder that, you know, these are still just things that we do and not necessarily who we are. And again, it allows you to recognize your worth and value as just a individual citizen of this earth and universe, which for me has translated to a lot less stress and, again, self-limiting beliefs on the field.
Such an interesting concept that the removal of the ego allows us to appreciate others and see our role in the greater scheme. And I think I can understand how that would work on a soccer pitch. And yet it's not what strikers are typically known for. You know, it's a lot of it is about the flair. And so it's refreshing to hear you speak. One more question for you about something you learned. This one not as serious or valuable as meditation, but entertaining to the fans the other night, the backflip that you threw after you scored against Cincinnati. Is that a trademark? Is that something where'd you first learn to do the backflip? And is there ever a part of you that wonder if you're going to get all the way around? I would be for
Man,
me.
I tell you, it's been a couple years since I pulled that one out. And it's funny because it does go kind of like what I was previously just saying, because before the game, you know, the kind of concept I was entertaining was just like, wow, you know, these games are like straight parties. And, mm-hmm. It did bring me back to my younger self in my younger days. You know, I liked partake in a good time. I still do, you know, but definitely a lot more when I was younger, and that's when I had that surging bit of energy where I was doing backflips, after goals. And it was kind of like a little challenge to myself to, prove that I still got it. And again, it is an appreciation for those aspects of, who I was that ultimately have gotten me here today. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't know if I was going to get all the way around. But
good job. You succeeded.
It was just a full commit, so it worked out.
Fantastic, CJ. Our time with you is running short, so the last couple of quick questions. These are one-word answers, really, for you. You've talked about how much you're enjoying Nashville. Oscar Hansen on social media and also Fenneman have also asked questions around food. So Oscar asked favorite food in Nashville, and Fenneman asked pancakes or waffles for breakfast. What's your choice?
Waffles, man. Yeah.
Waffles it is. And what about your favorite food in Nashville?
Oh, it's got to be the honey hot chicken, man.
Mm. You've been enjoying that. Yeah. Fantastic.
You and I both.
Big final question. Big stand coming up now of away trips. What are your hopes and expectations as you go into three long road trips now?
We just keep doing what we're doing. I believe now the tricky part is with our success, teams are going to be looking at us more and more in depth. So they're going to definitely be prepared. So, again, I cherish these moments because it's an opportunity to show grit and character. And I think that's what we got to keep doing if we want to, contest for a championship.
Well, we look forward to you continuing your progress with Nashville SC. And we thank you for bearing with us tonight, CJ, as well, through the technical gremlins that we have. And you've been able to connect to us in the end and take a lot of those fans' questions as well. Good luck, and thanks for talking to us.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
There we go. CJ Sapong. It was worth the wait as we managed to get that working. We're going to preview Toronto briefly after the break. This is NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila.
Left side for Dan Lovitz, who gallops into the attacking end. Lovitz with room to roam. Lovitz along the 18. Shot! Score! Hawkinson! Old Gold has broken loose!
There we go. What a moment that was as Luke Hawkinson's brace helped Nashville to a huge, thrilling win over Toronto FC. Last month, 3-2 is how it finished. And now, finally, the boys in gold will go back across the border. We'll go across the border for the very first time as they travel to BMO Field this Sunday night. You'll hear it live here on ESPN 94.9, also on MyTV 30. And if you live in Canada, you would be hearing the call of our guest, Luke Wildman, who joins us, voice of MLS and many more on TSN. Luke, thanks for talking to us. And, what state do we find Toronto in then when Nashville travel into BMO Field this weekend compared with where they were when the two sides met?
Well, a much better state, Tony. Thanks for having me on. Good to see you. Look, TFC were in an absolute mess earlier this season. Six games without a win led to Chris Armas being fired, and that was having only taken charge back in January. And then the last four games under interim head coach Javier Perez, the Spaniard who's taken a step up, having been Armas's assistant, they were unbeaten. They've won two, both on the road at New England. The first game Perez was in charge, and then most recently against Chicago. Rather fortunate victory. Alex Bono standing on his head, the keeper making 13 saves, a career high for him. Still not sure quite how they won that game. And then in between, two home draws against Orlando and the Red Bulls. But the return home and the change of coach has really made a difference to the environment, the players, the enthusiasm around Toronto FC. And now there is at least some hope that they can drag themselves off the basement in the Eastern Conference and up towards those playoff places.
How does interim manager Javier Perez approach the group differently than his predecessor Chris Armas, Luke? Have you seen tactical changes, or do you think it has been just the benefit you often see when there's a new manager and the morale boost that comes with that?
Yeah, you do usually get that new manager bump. And I think we're still waiting to see right now, is it because of Perez, or how much of it is because, one, they're back home, they're playing in front of the fans, they're living at home for the first time in 16 months. They're also, back with Jozy Altidore after he was exiled, fell out with Chris Armas, trained away from the first team for 6 weeks. So now they've got all three designated players back in the squad as well, along with Pozuelo and Sotelbo. So while everything was stacked against Armas, and came to a spectacular, you know, horrendous end with a 7-1 defeat at DC United, worst loss in club history. Things have changed pretty rapidly. Perez has freed them up a little bit. The players are on side. I think they're trying to play a more simple game rather than Chris Armas's high press style that maybe didn't suit the team. Still very, very fragile defensively. That's the biggest concern. But there is a lot more to say positively about Toronto than there was just a month ago.
Luke, I'm interested in the whole Chris Armas kind of situation because it was no surprise what he would come in and want to do. Everybody knows that's the kind of way he's going to want to imprint his soccer on the team. And do you think from his perspective, he might be looking at this going, you know, I didn't even get a chance to take this team back into Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's hard to survive a 7-1 shellacking these days in any league. But is there any case for saying he should have had more time given that he didn't exactly do anything that anyone didn't expect he was going to do with the team?
No, to be fair, Michael Bradley actually said that he didn't think Armas stood a chance with everything that had gone on from coming in after Greg Vanney, who had been, you know, 6 years in charge. It's like replacing Sir Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger. You don't really want to be that next man in. You'd rather be the next one after that one. But Chris Armas came in pre-season. They had an issue with COVID. They missed 2 weeks. Then they had to travel and be in Orlando. Then he fell out with Altidore. They had Champions League complicating things at the start of the season. Pozuelo, last year's league MVP, was injured. Soteldo, the designated player, didn't come in until a few weeks into the campaign. And now, just as everything is sorted, he's out of the door and Javier Perez has things a little clearly more stacked in his favour. So yeah, everything was against Armas. The one thing I would say is that I'm not really sure he was put in a position to succeed in terms of, you know, what he was trying to do with the players that he had. I'm not sure was ever going to be able to work. They didn't change the squad. An older, more experienced squad, maybe trying to do things that they weren't really on side with. So I think it fell down pretty early with Chris Armas, who, by the way, was absolutely fantastic to deal with in the short time he was there. Can't say enough about how he opened up himself to us from a distance, not really knowing him, being able to get to know him over Zoom and phone conversations. But unfortunately for him, it just didn't work out.
You hear nothing but good things about him and certainly wish him the best as he moves forward to his next stage. And as we speak, despite a really tough start, one win in their first 11, Toronto, after this recent resurgence, are just 9 points shy of the playoff line. Their form has dramatically improved. You've mentioned they're back home, and I'm sure that's nice for you as a broadcaster as well to be able to be in a press box again. Certainly great for the club to play in front of the supporters. Given those factors, is it reasonable to expect this Toronto team to have a chance to play its way back into playoff contention?
Well, that's what the president, Bill Manning, and GM Ali Curtis certainly expect to happen. And I think they're going to ride this with Javier Perez as long as it will go. In fact, they'd like to see him stay till the end of the season and make it into the playoffs. Comparisons being drawn with the 2016 Seattle Sounders, who were last place in July in the West when they fired Siggy Schmidt and ended up winning MLS Cup on a penalty shootout, actually at BMO Field in Toronto in 2016. They think they've got the squad to be able to do it. Defensively, you know, they still have big problems, but when you've got Pozuelo and Soteldo combining and Altidore able to come in, you know, Michael Bradley in the midfield, players coming back from the Gold Cup very soon, players who have won before, and also a very stacked home schedule towards the end of the season. They only played four of the first 12 so-called home games in Orlando. So they've got a lot of games at BMO Field to come, and they'll hope to be able to make that home advantage count down the stretch for sure.
In direct contrast with Nashville, of course, who've had such a home-heavy early start to the schedule. Luke, we really appreciate you joining us tonight. Look forward to, of course, following your continuing coverage of Toronto with TSN north of the border. And it is just great to see the Canadian teams starting to have something like some normality. So, Luke Warman, great to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining us on NSC Backstage. Wes, I have to say thank you to you as well and your efforts at, as we establish the line to CJ as well in keeping the show on the road. Greatly appreciated tonight. Have you enjoyed it?
Oh, it's been fantastic. I can't do much in this life, but I can talk until I'm blue in the face. So absolutely great to join you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, you were required to do so tonight, my friend. Thank you very much for your company. Thank you for listening. Thank you for bearing with us as we got CJ on the line. This has been NSC Backstage. We'll see you next week. And we're presented by Camarena Tequila. Cheerio.